Welcome to my podcast, where we are going to talk about a lifestyle with dogs and throw in a few life lessons along the way. Whether you're a hound hunter, a bird dog enthusiast running setters, pointers, retrievers, or a flat-out running dog junkie, this podcast is for you. I am your host, Heath Hyatt, a certified law enforcement canine trainer with over three decades of personal and professional training and handling experience. It's time for me to pay it forward. So grab your leads, lace up those boots, and come and join me on this lifelong process of teaching, training, and learning all types of hunting dogs. Do you like to be outdoors like I do? Hunting, fishing, hiking? If so, OnX is the app for you. I've been a loyal OnX user since 2013. It's the one app I can honestly say I use daily. While hunting, I know where I'm at all times. I mark trails, feeding, bedding areas, and the list goes on. When I'm traveling, I use it to pre-scout all the new places that I'm blessed to hunt. While out west hiking Yellowstone, I knew exactly where every trail went and the difficulty of each one. And here's a secret. I even use it to mark my favorite fishing spots. It's been a game changer at work. I've used it numerous times to get in touch with property owners. I even landed MedFlight one time in the middle of nowhere using the GPS coordinates. OnX has so many great features and tools, you can literally use it for everything. It is by far the best mapping app on the market. So get started with OnX today using K920. That's the letter K, number 920, and know where you stand. All right, it is Wednesday, and you know what that means. Getting ready to tune in to another episode of What's Up Wednesday. Here we are for your weekly dose of canine training know-how, and that's all dogs. Bird dogs, bear dogs, cat dogs, coyote dogs, deer dogs. We're going to learn about them all. But today, we're going to talk about the last couple of weeks, what I've been into, what I've been doing, and we're going to spend the majority of today talking about APA breed days in Greenville, Tennessee. And man, it was packed. If you guys were there, you know, talking to Mark and some of the other people, it was a record number this year. Turnout was phenomenal. I know the weather was pretty bad on Friday, but you know, that's how it goes. And then Saturday, a little chilly. I had to drink several cups of coffee while I was standing around running my yak, but it was a nice day. Great crowd. I love to see all the people coming together for a common thing, which is hound hunting and our love for the sport and being in the same place and supporting each other. So it was phenomenal. But we're going to talk about that for the bigger part of this podcast. So I've been going down. This is my third year consecutive, and I started going to breed days just to, everybody knows that I'm running a bunch of tri-colored Holsteins right now, but my first dog was a plot dog. Brandy was my first dog, and it still is near and dear to my heart. I will tell you that. I'm not colorblind by any means, and she's been one of the best dogs that I've ever owned, and I miss her dearly. I wished I had her right now, but so plots are near and dear to me, even though right now I don't have any. But I started going down to breed days a couple years ago. And actually, you know, just to kind of give you guys the backstory is I sat down and recorded a podcast with Chris and Mark Dufresne. That was the first year I was down there. And then that's kind of what's led me to what I'm doing now on the podcast. So you guys tuned in and started listening and asking questions, and that's what led me here. That's why I'm doing what I'm doing, is because of you, the listeners, and everybody, you know, wanting to learn. So I went last year and I judged the bench show. That was a great time. I enjoy doing those things. I enjoy dogs, period. And I really like a well put together dog. I love it. So I went down last year and judged the bench show. And then this year we went down just so we could talk to people and meet people and see old friends, make new ones. And we did that. We did a lot of that this year. So I'm going to start giving some shout outs and just talking about some of the conversations I had, which some of it's going to pertain to dog training. You're going to want to listen, you're going to catch that. But, you know, we got down there that morning, and the first person I run into was Jerry Barker. And, you know, Jerry come up and hunted with me last year. We done a podcast with him, his first time bear hunting. And so Jerry, I spent a lot of time with, quite a bit of time with Jerry, just talking. Jerry and I have got, we've got some plans coming up. And I don't know if this podcast will drop before it happens, but if it does, you need to tune in and stay tuned in, because we're going to be dropping some videos, probably some reels. We've got a short trip planned. I'm excited about it. Everybody knows that I love to fish. That's not a secret. And I love chasing those old thunder chickens. I love to turkey hunt. And, man, they've been out here gobbling behind my house. When it's warm weather, there's a couple of jakes back here just hammering their heads off. And then I've got an older bird that's on out the mountain a little bit. But I love to turkey hunt. So Jerry and I are going to get together, and hopefully we can put a couple good videos together. And we're going to have a good time regardless. We are going to chase some birds and laugh and carry on, probably not sleep enough, get up way too early. And that's what it's about. And there's no, you know, it's a lot of excitement is trying to call in a critter that instinctively is not made to be called in. Usually he's calling the hens to him. And so look forward to that. I look forward to it. And you guys should keep an eye out for what's coming up. So I talked to Jerry for a good while, ran into Mark Miller, and Mark is handling fever for Fielder. And, man, he brought home some hardware. I seen a picture of him. He had dog food stacked up knee-high to a six-foot horse. But bringing home the hardware, they're doing really good with that young dog. So talked to Mark for just a little bit. Ended up running into George Lambert. Talked to him for a good while. George is a super good guy, super nice. He got kind of pulled away from many, many, many fans that he had that was following him on the YouTube channel. So George got off doing his thing. And then I run into the old group that I used to hunt with in Bland. I run into Scott and Casey and Everett and Jerry and Nathan. Always good to see those guys. I don't see them like I used to. I run into them a couple of times in the woods a year, but spent some time with them. And talked to Scott McLaughlin. He's with the Virginia Bear Hunter Association. Talked to him for a few minutes. And then I met a guy by the name of Danny Boat. And Danny lives down in North Carolina. And here we're talking about how small the world is, right? So Danny went to Virginia Tech. And you guys know that I'm within earshot of Tech. And it's a lot of BB. I met BB when he was at Tech. And Hunter Martin, we've talked to him. If you follow him on Instagram, Hunter's Pursuit, Hunter went to Tech. He's from Eastern Shore. So small world. I talked to Danny for a good while. He had his son with him, and we talked about training and talked about dogs and books. And in fact, Danny just sent me a text message, and he had, 50 books, and he was asking me about them. And he had some really good literature in there. And you know, I love to read. I read a lot, and I believe that learners are readers. So Danny had some books in there. We chatted back and forth actually this morning. So I met him. That was, you know, that was a pleasure. And then I run into Jody Lambert while I was standing there talking to Kirk Price. Kirk, if you guys don't follow him on YouTube, he's got a big channel. He's got his stuff he's promoting called Meat Dog. Kirk was getting, he was getting inundated, man. Kids and people were coming up and buying his merchandise, buying the shirts and the hats, and the kids were coming up and having him sign autographs. And it's just great to see that. It's great to see our future taking interest in what we do and following some of these guys that are trying to be mentors and role models for our future. So I talked to Kurt for a little bit, and he got busy, so I kind of left him alone for a while. And then I run into Sam. Sam's a truck driver, Reniger, as I think how you pronounce that. Sam, if I didn't pronounce that right, then I'm sorry. Didn't mean to butcher it. Sam and I talked for a minute. He drives a truck. He says he listens to the podcast, you know, when he's out at nighttime, and it, you know, he's learning. Plus, it's keeping him, you know, keeping him company, really. So I met Sam. It was a pleasure meeting Sam. I did see Mark in passing. Mark was so busy that we were going to catch up, but he's got other responsibilities and priorities, so try not to interfere with that. But I have talked to Mark since, and he did confirm that it was a record crowd and that it's growing. The APA is growing, and they're doing good things with that organization. So kudos to Mark. And I know Katie Woodward and them is on the board. I didn't see them because I did not make it to the bench show. I got to talking and running my yap, and I was basically up at the clubhouse thing, whatever you want to call it, and stood there. I stood by the fire for a little bit just to keep myself warm, but I never really made it past there. So I did not get to the bench show, and I was disappointed when I left. I was like, man, I missed the bench show. But they were doing the bays, the 2 and 3 dog bays. I stood there and watched it for a little bit. And I run into Doug DeVost. Doug's been on the podcast. He's the president of the Vermont Bear Hunters Association. Talked to him for a good bit. Actually, I went back and spent some time talking to Kirk and Doug. And we talked, you know, we just talked some dogs and talked about some things we were looking at and what we do, what we like, what we don't like. We got to, Kirk and I talked about our dogs because we're both running some Kemp dogs. And some, you know, some traits that we're seeing or some things that, you know, does your dog do this? Does your dog do that type of thing? But one of the interesting things that I found, and I meant to follow up with Kirk on it, and I may even do that. So some guy, whoever was with Jody Lambert, was asking Kirk about raising pups. And I just listened. I was just there listening. Jody and I were talking, and I had my one ear tuned in on what Kirk and that guy was talking about. And Kirk does the same, a lot of things, and we're able to. Where I live, I'm able to do some things that maybe some people aren't, which is let my dogs run loose. And Kirk was pretty much relaying the same information that I would have told the guy if he'd asked me. And that's what caught my attention. I'm like, oh, okay, we're doing a lot of the same things. But he was talking, he lets his puppies run loose, basically run loose 24/7. And when they start running trash, because that's what they're going to do first, they're going to start running deer. And when they start running deer, he puts them up and, you know, that's when he takes them to the woods. So I listened to that conversation and, you know, I was thinking about it myself. Like, this is what I do. I do put my dogs up at night. Where I live in a, you know, farm community, there are coyotes. I don't know that they come around my house and bother my dogs, but I do put my pups up at night. And then when I leave for work in the morning, I let them out. And the pups that I'm raising now, you know, they're coming on 7 months old. They have not taken off and started chasing off game yet. Maybe I've kept a little bit tighter rein on them and keep them around the house a little bit more. They were loose basically up until they were five and a half months old. They were loose every day, all day, whether I was here or not. And then my elderly neighbor, they were chasing Chloe's horses one day, and she decided to call the dog warden on me, so I had to put them up. But I was here that day, and I actually saw it, got on them, and put them up, and then she called the next day. But that's how it is. She lives down the road, and so I've put them up and not give them as much opportunity for a little bit. Let that cool down. I don't need trouble, especially in my profession. I don't need the popo up here messing with the popo, right? So, but I listened to that conversation that Kirk was having, and you know, if you're able to do that with your dogs, it's good. It's really good to let them. They learn so much faster, and they learn at their own speed. You're not forcing them into an environment that they're not comfortable with. They're comfortable with where they grew up, and you know, through a very early age, that environment is normal for them. Whatever environment you have them in, like I said, I've got I'm looking out my kitchen window right now, and I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 horses standing within 40 yards of my house. And if I look across the road there, when I say road, it's a right of way. I mean, Travis has probably got 25 head of cows. They got calves on them right now. So this is a normal environment for my dogs, is having them around the farm animals. And yes, they do. I've said it before. Most of my pups at some point in time are chasing the horses or cows, and I have to get onto them. And I've got to break that. And my neighbors are very gracious to me. They are good to me. And I've given permission. If they catch my dogs doing something that when I'm not home, I've told Travis, you take a switch and you go up there and you run them off. They don't need to be doing that. And I think he's called me twice on the litter now and said, hey, you don't mind hollering at your dogs? And then I'll holler at them and I'll take care of it. So I'm very blessed to be able to live where I live, and my neighbors are very good, but this is a normal environment. Fields and a little woodland and ponds and, you know, lots of people. Chloe boards horses, so I've got people coming in and out of her property, which is, you know, adjacent to mine. You know, I've got a bunch of kids from Tech that are boarding horses here, and the dogs go down in the barn and run around with them. In fact, I'll tell you a funny story. Attention hound hunters and outdoor enthusiasts. Are you ready to experience the thrill of fair chase hunting? If so, check out Southern Hound Hunting Magazine. It's your ultimate guide to all forms of hound hunting, starting in the flat woods of southern Georgia and covering vast terrains across the nation. We bring you genuine stories where the chase is exhilarating as the catch, recipes, and the brag pages that follow. These adventures will take you down memory lane. Whether you're a seasoned pro or a newcomer to the sport, if it's hound worthy, we've got you covered. Join us in this heart-pounding world of hound hunting. To subscribe or to buy the latest swag, go to southernhoundhunting.com. You can also follow along on Facebook and Instagram, where the hunt never ends. Get ready for the real fair chase experience when you join the pack here at Southern Hound Hunting Magazine. So one night I went to put the dogs up, and they were probably 5 months old. Yeah, they were probably 5 months old. And Bridger was nowhere to be found. I'd put the other ones up, and then I got a little worried. So I waited an hour, and it was good and dark by then. And I started looking for him. I went back. I walked Chloe's property line. I walked all the fences because there's a pond on the back side of the hill. And I'm like, oh, maybe got in the pond. So I went back to the pond and looked back there, nowhere to be found. I went over to Travis's, walked his fences, checked his barn above my house just to make sure he wasn't in there. And Chloe's barn is in front of my house. So I went down to the barn, because they shut the barn up, and I know he goes in there. So I went down in the barn, walked through the barn, checked the feed room, checked the tack room, checked everything, and I couldn't find him. And I even got in my truck, drove up and down the road, and went back an hour later. And guys, 9:30 my bedtime. I'm in bed between 9:30 and 10, and it is 11 o'clock. So I get back in my truck. I drive up and down the road. He's nowhere to be found. And I'm like, well, there's not a whole lot I can do. He's got my name tag on him. I'm hoping he turns up. And I tried not to stress about it too much. So I get up the next morning, to go to work, and I let Vice out. It's about 6 o'clock in the morning. I went, opened the door, let Vice out. Well, I noticed that my motion light was on in the driveway. But there's rabbits come around and stuff. So I thought, well, maybe it's a rabbit. Well, anyway, the motion light was on. As soon as Vice hit the feet, hit the deck and went over in the driveway, here comes Bridger around the house. And I got to back up. So Chloe comes down every morning at 6 o'clock to let the horses out of the barn and feed. So she's pretty much on clockwork. Like that's her time frame. So anyway, he showed up. I thought Bridger had followed her home that night and went up to her house and just slept there. And it was so late, I didn't want to call her, Rob, and wake him up. And I didn't want to go up there at 11 o'clock and, you know, worry him, shine my lights around. So I figured he just followed Chloe up to the house and crashed up there. So like 2 days later, Chloe's walking down through the field, and I don't know what we were talking. We was talking about something across the fence there, and she said, "Oh, by the way, your green collar." So I have all my dogs color coded, right? "Your green collar spent a night in the barn." And I was like, "In the barn? Which barn?" And she goes, "The one down there." She said, "Isabel had put one of the horses, brought one of the horses out of the stall and shut the stall." And she said, "When I went in this morning," she goes, "he was jumping up and down, and I seen him in the stall, so I let him out." So I don't know how that happened, but it did, and it worked out. And he wasn't hurt. And she was like, "I felt bad." I'm like, "Oh, no worries." I said, "Well," he showed up the next morning, I was tickled to death. So back to what Kirk was telling the guy, you know, let the dogs run loose if you can, as much as you can at a younger age. Lets them sort out a lot of things on their own. And you guys that are able to do this, you see that your dogs mature a little bit faster. And the reason they're able to mature a little bit faster is because they're figuring things out on their own. They're not being forced into an environment or into a situation that they're not comfortable with. And even if they're not, when they're around the house, they're able to work that out on their own. Like, you know, where my dogs are out from daylight till dark, I don't know what all they're getting into. You know, I check and make sure they're around or they're close by. I mean, my dogs have about, I don't know, 20 acres here, 25 acres here that they can roam around on. And, you know, as long as horses don't stomp on them and, you know, they're not aggravating the animals, like they can do whatever they want to. So I don't know what all they get into. You know, I don't know. I just know that when I holler for them and they come, then we're good. And this litter here has hung around the house or stayed close more so than the last litter. The last litter roamed a little bit further at this age. And, yeah, at 6 months old, they were Lady and AJ were running deer across the top of the mountain here. And I went out one morning to go to work, and Lady was just screaming and tossed across the ridge, and I was like, "Yeah, it's time to put her up." And Kirk and I kind of joked about that. I told him, I was like, "Yeah, I knew that it was time then," because she was getting out of pocket a little bit. She did bring herself back home. And that's something I like in a dog too, is having that home instinct. And I do think that being able to raise them like we do loose here at the house until a certain age, that I think that builds a home instinct a little better. I've had dogs over the years that you turn them loose and whichever direction they're going is the direction you got to go pick them up. And I think we all had that type of dog. So anyway, it was interesting listening to Kirk talk about that, because it's basically the same thing I do. And, you know, he has really good results, got some really good dogs. You know, if you follow him on YouTube, you'll see, I mean, he's putting content quite regularly. And then we got to talking, me, him, and Doug got to talking about some behaviors that dogs exhibit. And, you know, Doug and I were talking about dogs that, you know, I've got a dog now that is a phenomenal bear dog. Like, he's young, he's 3 years old, tough as pine knot, and catches game on his own. Don't need any help, could care less. But he's got some stuff at the house, some traits at the house that I don't care for. And Doug looked at me, he says, "You know, you can't breed him." And I said, I know. And I said, "I'm basically keeping this dog because he's a outstanding, you know, young hound. But I know that as far as the future with him, there'll be no offspring for me because of these traits that he exhibits. And I don't want more of them. I want less of them." and he's erratic at the house. He is, if you don't keep him busy, like you don't keep him busy, you keep him running and engaged doing something, he becomes destructive. Chews up water bowls. I've even put down metal water bowls, my canine water bowls, expensive water buckets, and literally just shreds them. He's wore his teeth down. If you look at his canines, it looks like somebody filed the tips off of him where he's been doing that. He don't bark a whole lot. Like, he's not a barker, but I had to make a concrete water and food bowl, and he would get his food bowl and flip it up in the air and start barking at it and running around his pen and running around his pen. And I, like I said, I'm sure if you guys have dealt with hounds long enough, you've seen some of that behavior, and I can't stand it. Like, I'll be honest, if he was not such a good hound, he would not be in my kennel right now, because it's taken a lot of patience from me to keep him. I'll just be honest. And it's only because of his house manners, nothing else. So we talked about that, and we talked about breeding and what we were looking for, and just some of the stuff that we were doing and not doing. And we talked about packs of hounds and, you know, how many dogs, and everybody's under the consensus that, you know, 4 to 6, you know, 6 dogs is a plenty. That's a good pack number. You know, we were all kind of on the same page with that, but it was just a great, great conversation with houndsmen, you know, talking about different thought processes and how they look at things. And, you know, it kind of, you know, gives you a different perspective. And had one of my buddies mention me last night, and he was listening to a podcast, and he was like, you know, I really enjoy hearing it from somebody else's perspective. I'm picking up things that I may or may not have missed. I may have missed. So when you talk to these other houndsmen that are hunting hard, and, you know, they've got good quality hounds, and you want to listen to them. And that's one thing about the breed days that I enjoy. I don't take a dog. The family goes, the girls were with us, and they had to stand there and listen to me talk for 6-7 hours to people. And they finally started giving me the arms crossed and giving me the roll my eyes, like, I'm ready to go. I'm hungry. But yeah, I mean, it was a really good conversation. I enjoy listening and learning, and I've learned throughout my hunting and my law enforcement handling career that a lot of times you just need to keep your mouth shut and listen to some of these guys and seeing what they're doing to be successful. And I think you've heard me talk about it from the Dutch guys that I'm very fond of now. I was not fond of their methods. I didn't like the way I didn't understand. That's what I should say. I did not understand their training method, why they were doing some of the things they were doing. And they were breaking it down and making it so simplified. I mean, when you hear me and Jarrett Moss talking about baby steps, they do micro baby steps. Like, it is where this pad's going to touch before that pad touches before we can take a step. And I didn't understand that. I didn't understand their philosophy, and I didn't understand what they were doing. And after I learned, and it, like I said, it took me 3 times sitting through their class to say, okay, these guys have been doing this for 40 years. They're very successful at what they do. And Heath, there's something you've got to be able to learn from them. They didn't become successful by not doing things a certain way. And they are very regimented and very structured in their training, method. And I think I've taken some of that from them, is I want to be able to accomplish one thing before I move to the next. And we had this conversation in my canine group this week, is like, if your dog can't do it 9 out of 10 times, then we're not going to the next step. And we were laying a track this week, and he went from running, he was running his dog off lead, which I was having him do so the dog could learn. We're not teaching a dog to track, but so the dog could do what he was needing to do and he could sit back and watch those behaviors. And that'll be another podcast because that's going to be a good one. And he was using a 30-foot lead, so he went from no lead to a 30-foot lead. And about, I don't know, not even 100 yards in the track, the dog got distracted, started making loops and wouldn't leave the lead alone. So I had him put the dog up, and we went to a 10-foot lead. So we took 20 foot of that lead off. And that next track, dog clicked right along, boom, 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 boom. So baby steps, small steps, doing things one thing at a time. Make sure you can be successful at it multiple times before we move on. And I may have said this or not, but I am a huge believer of, and I tell Maddie this with her volleyball. Maddie, you don't practice something till you can get it right. You practice it until you can't get it wrong. And what that means is 9, 10 reps, dogs learn through repetition. And if I can't get it right 9 or 10 times out of 10 times, then why am I even thinking about moving forward? Why do I even need to try to do the next step? So anyway, that's some things we're working on. APA days were great. Like I said, shout out to all the people that I got to talk to and got to meet and listening to conversations through a lot of different houndsmen there, having that conversation with Kirk and Doug and just listening to them and listening to people ask them questions on what they do and picking up things from them is what it's about. I love learning. I love interaction. I love to, you know, I'm huge on networking. That's the word, networking. You know, having somebody else in your back pocket that you can say, hey, what about this? What about that? You know, we talk about it in our canine training. You know, I've got a handful of people right now that are a lot more experienced than I am, have seen and handled probably thousands more dogs than I have. And I can call him right now and say, hey, I got this problem. Walk me through it. And they would give me 2 or 3 options. Well, try this. If that don't work, then try that. And if that don't work, then try this. And that's the same thing that I'm picking up from when I'm listening to those conversations and listening to those guys talk about what they do with their dogs, how they handle their dogs, how they hunt their dogs. So APA days is a great place to go and expand your knowledge. It's a great place to go and meet and talk and learn. And those guys down there are doing a phenomenal job. You got to give a shout out to all of them that put that together. Like I said, talking to Mark after the fact, he said they didn't have no downtime. And he was wore plumb out. He was so glad to get back and rest. So anyway, that's what we were doing. That's what's up Wednesday. I've got some tracking stuff that's coming up, and I have moved on to another phase of training, baby steps with my pups. Like I said, they're 6. They're getting ready to turn 7 months old. So by the time this comes out, when I talk about them, they're gonna be 7 months or whatever. But if you followed my stories, I've kind of already give you a little bit of a hint what we're doing with them. So thank you guys, and we will see you next Wednesday.